This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio or at venues around the city, and we listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and maybe even to find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Japanese Breakfast. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Alisa Ali at WFUV. Alisa, this was a stripped-down acoustic session with Michelle Zauner, Japanese Breakfast, and her partner. Not only are these songs so tender and vulnerable, but she, as a person and as a communicator, is so forthcoming. This was just really beautiful all the way around. We've had her here before. Can you talk to me a little bit about what it was like to have her here for this most recent album?
Yeah, we interviewed her for Jubilee, her great album. And it was interesting because right around that time, she had also released a beautiful memoir called Crying in the H Mart, which we talked a little bit about. And now this album, she is in a very different place from where she was headspace-wise for both of those projects, which were also two very different projects, but that came out at the same time. I think she's such an interesting writer, and she has to write very differently for songs versus for books.
Right.
And that book, Crying in the H Bar, it actually started as an essay that she wrote, and then I guess she was asked to expand on it and then wrote this really brilliant book. But in the interview, I talk with her, and one thing I was interested to know about her writing was, you know, with the hindsight of the success of those two projects, how that affects her writing going forward and the differences between writing for books and writing for songs. And she's so eloquent.
Yeah.
And she's so well read. And she takes a lot of influence from high art.
Like, yeah.
She's soaking in paintings and literature, and it is being filtered through her unique processing brain and put into this beautiful collection of songs from Melancholy Brunettes and Sad Women. But I often say when I'm playing it on the radio that it's really for everyone, not just for Melancholy Brunettes and Sad Women.
That's very true. And what is the first song that we're going to hear in this session?
The first song is Orlando in Love. Here on WFUV, it's Japanese Breakfast.
Orlando in love, brought 69 candles for melancholy brunettes and sad women. Breeze carries salt and sipping milky broth. He cast his gaze towards the sea out the Winnebago. Thank you.
has a live version of Orlando in Love here on WFUV from the new Japanese Breakfast album for Melancholy Brunettes and Sad Women, the fourth full-length record from Japanese Breakfast. I'm Elise Alley, here with Michelle Zahner. Congratulations on your new record. I love that single, Orlando in Love, so I love that you played that with Peter. Thank you so much for coming in and doing such a lovely stripped-back version of the song here in Studio A.
Thank you for having me.
Now, the session that we're doing today is just you and Peter, acoustic, very different from what it sounds like on the album, but the bones of the song and the feeling of the song most definitely shine through, especially in that performance right now. Is that basically how you came up with the songs, just two acoustic guitars?
Yeah, it usually starts with one acoustic, and then I worked on the string arrangement. And then when Blake Mills and I worked on the record, a lot of the core of these songs ended up being two acoustic guitars. Yeah, honestly, my last album, Jubilee, had such large arrangements that this kind of setup would have been impossible for any of the songs. All of the songs would sound terrible for the most part in a stripped back fashion. And so one thing I was actually really excited about this record is being able to play different versions of this album. And I think all of the songs on this record can really stand to be performed stripped down.
That's the, I think, mark of a truly great song, if you can strip it back and it still sounds great. Although that said, I love all of the different layers that are on this record. I mean, especially the electric guitars sounding so, I don't know, they're just kind of slicing through. Talk about playing guitar on this record.
Yeah, so Jubilee, my last record, had really large arrangements. I was writing string and horn arrangements, and there was just a lot going on, so there wasn't much room for me as a guitar player in the live performance. I was really working as like a frontman singer, which was a role that was kind of uncomfortable for me, honestly. And I think I was really longing to play the guitar again, and knew that when I was going to take on this record, it was going to be very focused on guitar, and I was going to be playing guitar on a majority of these songs in the live set. I knew also that I was going to have to find a producer, and wanted to work in a studio for the first time with someone new at the helm. And Blake Mills is, you know, legendary guitar player. I think he's probably one of the best guitar players of our time. And getting to work with him on and his many rack of guitars was a real joy.
And you mentioned that you went into the studio with Blake Mills. In the past, you really have done a lot of home recordings and recording in various different places. But this was a pretty fancy studio in L.A. You went to Sound City, which has made some like phenomenal records. What did it feel like being in that space and working in that studio?
It felt hard-earned, you know. I'd always made records with just whoever was around, just friends of mine that happened to be in town and like have some gear, or, you know, I knew had made a record before. And so I was really excited to work with someone that had like a real oeuvre and had, you know, worked out of this really amazing studio with a lot of history and a lot of great gear. And, you know, after over 10 years of making music, you really hear the difference between home recordings and a place that's outfitted with, you know, the best gear and stuff. And that's not to disparage home recording at all, because I think that people are able to make really high quality recordings at home now. And there is a comfort and intimacy in that process that allows for real creativity to come through. But I think this was the first time that I felt I could feel that confident and creative even in that kind of environment, and also wanted to have that experience for the first time of being in a place that was meant for recording.
Now, you've talked in the past, speaking of confidence, you've talked in the past about, and a lot of people talk about this, I have this myself big time, imposter syndrome. And especially with singing, I think you felt imposter syndrome. But I mean, I love your voice. I think it is so beautiful and it really floats. Talk about the singing on this record and your confidence in respect to that.
I've never really thought of myself as a singer. I've always loved writing music and have always kind of had to be the singer in order for the
by
music
default,
to get
singer,
made.
Right.
Yeah. But it's not, I've never been someone that like enjoys singing around the house or like from a young age. Everyone told me I had a great voice, but, you know, when I was a teenager and I was listening to artists like Mounirey or Kimya Dawson or Joanna Newsom or Neil Young, these people with these, you know, they don't sound like, they don't have Adele's pipes, you know, but they have so much character in their voice and their music is what it is because of their voices. And so that gave me the confidence to start making music. And then I think as you get to be a bigger artist and people begin to sort of focus on that, or you write songs that kind of push your voice into a new place that you have to get accustomed to and go through the growing pains of adjusting to that in real time. I really struggled on the Jubilee album. So yeah, I don't know. I think maybe, yeah, I'm still singing the way that I have actually started seeing an amazing vocal teacher in New York, whose name is Star Busby, and she has actually given me a lot of confidence when it comes to approaching singing in a way that I've never had before. I mean, it's still something that I'm developing, but just putting in that work and, you know, little things that you learn about the body and how to support it, I find have been really fruitful for me on this record album rollout and on tour. Yeah.
Is there any advice, like mentally, that you could give about singing or that you've received
yeah,
that was
I mean,
really helpful?
I just never sang in a choir. I never had any kind of direction. So just simple stuff that maybe everyone knows, like I just didn't know, like how much of the voice is just breathing and making space in your body to support the note. And I think also it feels very therapeutic for me because the way that I've sang for many years has been really indicative of my personality, where just I want things so badly and I work so hard towards them and I push. And a lot of singing well is just relaxing. And that is really hard for me because I want things so badly and it feels like I need to push to get there. And so much of the work that we've been doing is just learning how to breathe and relax into the note and make space for everything. And yeah, I mean, it's been really healing for me, honestly, because, you know, I'm not someone, I don't like this idea that imposter syndrome is like something we all have to get over or like everyone has it, like don't feel that way. Because there's a reason why you feel that way. It's because you are an imposter, you know? I mean, everyone wants to be exceptional, you know? And if you feel like there's room to grow and to be better, that and that's what imposter syndrome is telling you, then that's really important because that makes me want to do the work, you know? And that's how you improve and that's how you get better, is like those feelings of feeling like an imposter, be it in your singing or in your guitar playing or the way that you're writing music, you know, instead of letting that defeat you, it's just about how you respond to that. And if you are putting in the work and doing the best that you can, and that helps to alleviate those symptoms, then that's the way to deal with it. But I don't think imposter syndrome is inherently bad. I actually think it's the meter in which we can judge where we want to be.
Japanese Breakfast live in Studio A. What a pleasure talking with Michelle Zahner. We are going to hear another live song. Can you tell us a little bit about this one or set it up for us?
Yeah, Lita. This song I wrote about a long distance phone call with my father, who I hadn't seen or spoken to for many years. And it is about the first thing that he said to me was, he was like a wine drunk in Crete, and he said, you know, tell me everything. And I thought that was a really sweet and touching moment that, you know, despite all of the time that had gone by and everything that we had gone through, that kind of casual like connection that you have with a family member that, you know, that you have all this history with and this deep, inexplicable bond, for better or for worse. And I read about this story or this myth of the Gordian knot, which was this very complex knot with of many different ties that, like, that the village said whoever could untie it would be the ruler of would become the ruler of Asia, and the person who cut it, instead of going through just tying this like really complicated knot, the way to solve it was just to kind of slice through it with a sword. And so that to me was kind of cutting this Gordian knot between my father and I, and this really personal phone call that we had in the aftermath.
Version of Lita here in Studio A. That's Japanese Breakfast, a song from the new record for Melancholy Brunettes and Sad Women. I am Elisa Lee. Thank you so much, Michelle, for that outstanding performance and for that great story about the phone call with your dad. I think you were talking about how writing lyrics, to you feel like it's a very straightforward story that you're telling. You're not trying to be, you know, obscure about your lyrics. You often receive feedback from people saying, oh, wow, that was about this completely other thing. How important is it for you to know that your message is coming across, like that story is received rather than make of it what you will? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it feels, my feelings about it are complicated because I think it's really special for people to have their own interpretation of music or art in general. And I think it's a really special connection to connect what you need from a piece of music or a book or art. And a lot of times it's things that we need to apply to our own lives. And that's part of its power. But then there's also parts of it that are frustrating to me because it seems so clearly there, and it means something quite deep. But then it's my own fault because there's stuff like hidden in these songs, you know, that isn't necessarily stuff I want to talk about all the time. A lot of this record is incredibly personal and very private, and it's not something I want to explicitly explain. But then there's this other part of me that really wants people to see what's maybe missing from their interpretation, you know. I think it was also complicated by the reception to my book, because my book was so direct and could be interpreted in other ways in some capacity, but for the most part, what I wanted to get across was exactly how people really received it, I think. And so I entered into this place of some frustration of like, why can't I do that with my music, and how do I speak more directly? Also, to some extent, is like when a song is really successful too, is like when everyone can really feel what you are going for and like can also relate to that, and also within that have their own interpretations that mean something different to them, but also it's very universally understood the way that it was intended in some way. So yeah, that's my answer.
I think sometimes if people don't get the exact meaning, I think they're still picking up on the feeling. And the feeling of this entire record is, you know, there's a maudlin aspect to it, and it's a contemplative record. And you spoke very eloquently about the feeling of it and your idea on what you want it to be. And I think you used a Virginia Woolf quote. Do you remember it?
That's something about like the line between melancholy and
sadness. The line between melancholy and sadness is like a knife's blade.
Yeah.
And you wanted it to fall on kind of either side of that. Or not even sad, no, happiness.
Yeah, that's what I think
it was. Between sadness and happiness.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Something like that.
But it's so interesting how it is such a fine line.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the where I'm at in my life right now is very fixated on that. I think one thing that was tough for me with this record is like many people interpreted it as this record about like my struggles with success or something. And I don't really feel that's what this record is about. I think this record is very preoccupied with the passage of time and the things that you miss out on by taking certain paths in life, for better or for worse. You know, I'm fully in love with the path that I have taken, and I wouldn't have done it any other way. But there is a loss that comes with any path that you take. So for me, you know, I was thinking a lot when I tried to discuss like the difficulties that come with being a musician, which on the last song that we play, which is called Magic Mountain, is very much about. Magic Mountain is a book by Thomas Mann about a man who visits his cousin in a sanatorium and ends up staying there for 7 years. I was really moved by this novel, and you know, I think because of I was touring for a very long time while I was reading it, I kind of imposed my own circumstances onto this book and felt almost as if touring as a musician, it feels like I've been in the sanatorium for 7 years. I've been kind of removed from real life, from the flatlands of everything else that's going on in real life, doing this thing, traveling the world, playing these shows, while my friends are passing away, getting married, having birthdays, having hard times, getting cancer diagnoses, like, and I'm not there with them. I'm not seeing the seasons change. There's a lot to be missed out on too, and I am so delighted that I get to live this like beautiful life I've chosen, but there is a loss too of things that people I didn't get to say goodbye to or support or be a good friend. And so yeah, I was just reflecting a lot on that balance, and a lot of the last song too is about becoming a mother someday, and what does that mean to be a woman artist, and what am I going to be sacrificing in the sort of anticipatory grief, and what I might lose by taking that path that maybe a lot of men in my position haven't had to really reflect on. And then there are sort of more fictional stories in the book of, you know, people who have been in marriages that they were unfaithful in, and they have lost a piece of that commitment because of the decisions that they've made in the name of pleasure, or an old man thinking about his estranged relationship with his daughter and the decisions that he made for himself that got him to that place. So for me, it feels like this album is sort of a collection of short stories about those moments and when people are reflecting about the decisions they've made and sometimes the temptations they've succumbed to that lead to the kind of consequences that are at hand.
You are such a wonderful writer. And I completely agree with you that these do feel like short stories, each of these songs. And by the way, I did want to say congratulations on the success of Crying in the H Mart. It was a wonderful book.
Thank you.
And I know that you went to Korea to write another book, which is still in the works.
Yeah.
And I heard that you had a great time in Korea and it was really a renewal process for you. Can you talk a little bit about how wonderful it was, that experience?
Yeah, I mean, it was so healing in ways that I maybe expected and didn't expect. You know, I've never really had, I grew up in a place, in a city with very little diversity. And I also work in an industry with very little diversity and have interests that are, you know, sort of very white male dominated. And I never really got to have Korean friends. And I never really understood what that might bring into my life and how special it is to connect with someone who grew up with similar parents, you know, parents that raised you in a similar way and certain traditions and certain, you know, just ways of thinking. And I just felt really, I met some really wonderful lifelong friends there. And it was nice to just, it had been years since I lived in a city and watched the seasons change because I've always been traveling and on tour. And it was nice to just take a year off and like live a life, you know, it was very privileged. I had an advance from my publisher that allowed me to just live in Korea and work on writing this book and study the language. And yeah, you know, I had all these health problems that I think were all just kind of stress induced. And, you know, I just ate well, lived well. And, you know, I needed that year. And it was, it's made me be able to return to my livelihood with like so much more joy and chill.
Well, congratulations on the success of this new record, which we are really loving, your fourth album, For Melancholy Brunettes and Sad Women. And you're going to play us one more magical song from it. And we've talked about Magic Mountain, so I think a great way to close out this session, a live version of that song, which, by the way, you're doing with your partner, Peter. So, you know, even though you miss out on some things by traveling, at least you get to bring your partner.
Together. It is very nice.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
And you guys make beautiful music together. And you are going to do that right now as you play Magic Mountain here in Studio A. Thank you. Japanese Breakfast, Michelle Zahner. Thank you.
Thank you.
Subside, I'll return to the fireland. A new man, a new man. Thank you.
That was Japanese Breakfast performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to Michelle and Peter for joining us in our studio and to Dead Oceans. Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Aaron Merriman, James Higgins, and Sage Rochetti. Our FUV live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Megan Suma produced this episode and is the executive producer of our show. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV live sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions on WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host, Alisa Ali.